Everyone.
What?
Can we address the elephant in the room?
Are you talking about me again? Stop.
Are you weight shaming him again?
No. You're weight shaming me again.
Or it's me.
I think I've lost a few pounds.
Well, I'm just worried.
Elephant in the room.
Because, you know, there's stuff going on with Donald Trump. And I just want to make sure that nobody loses their temper. Because we know one thing. Nobody can talk about Trump without getting upset. Right?
Well, I just think that there's a lot of discourse on all sides. And people don't agree. And we live in a time now where we have very fractured opinions. And I think it's hard to have a calm dialogue about things.
It's very well measured, Joe.
On the other hand, I think what's going on with the trial that started now in the United States has some interesting
aspects.
Not just interesting aspects, has some interesting teaching lessons. Why I enjoy the common law system that we have in Canada and the UK and the UK versus the United States. And I know, again, I think BJ has this friend who's a criminal lawyer who I was on some text
BJ, you can't
with.
Just say BJ. Our producer, BJ.
Our producer, Benjamin.
And just
Benjamin.
To be clear, there's been a big dialogue going on before we started rolling here, which...
In any event, but talk
BJ,
about it later.
BJ, our producer, is like, you know...
nothing.
Yeah. So what do you want to start off with?
Lawfare. Bias? Lawfare. So here's why I want to start with the word lawfare. So I've been following a lot of podcasts from the United States because, of course, I live in Canada. So it's not as important to me as it is for people who live in the States in terms of what's going on there.
I think it's important. I think it's important for everyone to be aware of what's going on in the world, period. Right. Those of us who choose to be myopic in what we're going to consume, you are not going to be knowledgeable and you'll not be in a position to understand what the f*** is happening to you.
Okay. But the word lawfare I found intriguing because I hadn't come across it before. So I looked it up and it's strategic use of legal proceedings to hinder an opponent. There's another definition that has to do with international law and stuff like that. But that's the one that's relevant to the Trump thing. So there's the word lawfare is being used by a bunch of people saying all of these cases, and there's a bunch of different cases against him, which we can't get into because they're so diverse in terms of what he's charged with in various different states. But, you know, there's one that's current, and we'll talk about jury selection coming up because that's the most relevant thing right now. But there is the big use of the word lawfare right now to say this is absolutely corrupt and against democracy. And
well, it's, you know, the weaponization of a legal system to try and take out your opponent or to sully your opponent. And
on charges that would be, let's say, trumped up.
Right? But oh, she's been waiting all day to say that.
Pardon the pun. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Get it out of your system finally.
Oh, God.
Say it again. Just
this
for the,
show is, I would use the word recently, cathartic.
I have other terms, but okay. So yeah, I mean, that's a legitimate concern. We see that playing out in many jurisdictions. We have things similar to that in Canada. You know, Biden's son is going through legal proceedings. I mean, it's, you know, the weaponization of the legal system, including the criminal justice system, is nothing f-ing new. I mean, that's been around.
But more so in the States, politicians.
It's never been as significant now,
right,
where we see a former president of the United States going on trial. And regardless of whatever position you are with respect to the merits or non-merits, it's a fairly transformative moment for the United States and the one in New York.
Well, that's being cut. It's the first time that a former president's ever been put on criminal trial.
That's why I say it's transformative. I mean, I think this is a major, it's a major concern at many levels. And so I think lawfare is something we all have to be alert to because we have many versions of it in Canada.
Well, I think it's important for people to trust the legal system that charges won't be brought for strategic purposes, that charges will be brought when they're...
What are you talking about?
That charges will be brought when they're deserved or when they're appropriate.
Well, our whole podcast is based on wrongful accusations.
Yeah.
We're like the Michael Jordan of what's wrong about wrongful... Right. Or Steph Curry, because I think Steph Curry is a amazing three-point shooter. This is all we deal with is wrongful accusations,
yeah, but,
right?
But like,
trust the system.
The point I'm trying to make is I'm not trying to make a claim about what is or isn't legitimate.
I'm just teasing you.
You've unleashed the joke.
It's important. I've unleashed the elephant in the room, which was not you.
I'm sitting. I'm not going anywhere.
You're so self-deprecating. Yeah. Is so funny.
It's a big word.
So, but no, it's important for the public to believe, I think, for the public to believe that the legal system is not corrupt, right?
Yeah.
And so this use of the word lawfare is really important right now, especially because people get so emotional about Donald Trump, whether they love him or hate him, that I think what's really at stake here is whether or not people will continue to have faith in the legal system.
I think they will.
And one of those things right now is jury selection, right?
Yeah. So, but let's just
park that.
No, let's just park that for 1 second, because because this is something that's not talked about. It's not talked about enough. When it talks about faith in legal systems, there is always been a growing erosion of faith in the legal system, and it gets undermined often by politicians themselves. We've seen this in Canada, and I went nuts a number of times where we have politicians who want to blame our legal system for certain things. So it's been under attack, and when it does get weaponized, it's a problem. We're not saying it is or is not weaponized. We're not taking a position on it. But, you know, there are certain cases in the United States, I think. The one in New York is an extremely weak case that I don't take any joy in seeing a former or future president being on trial for. But what is an interesting, I think, case point for us is the jury selection process in the United States. Mm-hmm. And just how hard it is to pick a jury, because in New York, it's a center where there's a lot of people who may not be very favorable towards Trump, and you can't get more publicity.
What do they say in the states? Red states and blue states, right?
Right, and you could not get more publicity than he has. So how do you find a fair jury?
How do you find any? So this is a really funny point that I've heard other people make. How do you find a jury member who says that they can be impartial about Trump? I don't think anybody's impartial about Trump. You either love him or hate him, it seems to me.
I believe firmly that there are people who can come forth in a jury and say, regardless of whatever views
personal
I have,
feelings, yeah,
I will be able to put that aside, and I will be able to objectively and fairly and impartially assess the evidence and render a true verdict. I do believe that's possible. That's why I do like the jury system. I don't like what the Justin Trudeau did to it in Canada. And this is why I think this is an important lesson here, because we don't know in Canada, we can't do anything about jury selection. Justin has taken away peremptory challenges, and we have no way of screening.
Which in shorthand means you're just stuck with the first 12 jurors who say, basically, yeah, I can be impartial.
Right. And a judge does a significant inquiry of jurors about potential bias. I believe it goes in one ear, out the other, and a lot of people will just say I can sit on it or don't, or trying to get out for other reasons. I don't think it has the same impact as when lawyers are directly involved.
Right. We've become terrified of jury trials now.
I'm not terrified, I'm not happy in some cases. And yeah. I will say, you know, I only done one since the new legislation came in, and that judge, I praise him for this, Justice Dunphy, did an excellent job of involving both the Crown and defense in the jury selection process. And I thought it was extremely fair. And I was
given
very
the limitations
pleased
on his ability to do so.
Right. You know, like other judges feel it's important. I think some judges will say, I don't want to pick the jury. This is something that it's up to the lawyers. Mm-hmm. So there was involvement there. But that's not the mainstream of how we deal with it.
No, that's not the norm.
Now, in the United States here in this case, there's an extensive inquiry into
questionnaires, yeah, everything.
Very extensive.
Okay. So what's the other important thing, the difference between Canada and the U.S., we have a district attorney in the States who's run on the platform of saying, I'm going to put Donald Trump in jail.
Okay, so the district attorney in New York is elected. So district attorneys in the United States are elected positions.
And why is that good or bad?
It's horrible. Michael?
They have to pander if they want to get reelected, right?
Yeah, so there needs to be a separation of the criminal justice arm, particularly the prosecution element, from politics.
Yeah.
Where you have, you know, partisan politics involved in any type of aspect of the justice system, it's bad. Elected judges, elected district attorneys, in my opinion, and I'm sure there will be people from the United States who watch this who think I'm f-ing crazy, I do not believe that they have the same level of independence anymore, because their stats on whether they're putting people in jail where there's a higher risk of carjackings or a higher homicide rate, that person will not get elected again and they can get vilified. There are some who get elected who will stand their ground and say, this is what's best for our justice system, and will lose the next election. I'm not saying that there are not people who can get and do get elected to those positions who take an oath and stick to that oath. I just believe it is ripe, ripe for problems.
Well, so we have this thing that we call the special duty of the prosecutor in Canada. That's how we refer to it, in which a prosecutor has the obligation to seek the truth and not seek a conviction.
They're ministers of justice, period.
So when you, so in comparison, if you think about that, and I believe they have the same obligation in the States, but of
yes,
course,
they do. Yeah.
But they're elected. And so then when you run on a platform specifically saying, I'm going to put somebody in jail, how is that not a platform to say, I'm going to get a conviction regardless of the facts before they've even gone to trial, before they even have all the facts?
I agree with you 100%. I mean, it's a real problem. And in this particular example, there have been other district attorneys who said they're not going to take this case on and do it for obvious reasons.
At multiple levels.
Yeah, and I think this was low-hanging fruit that I don't quite understand the legal theory on it. And the U.S. lawyers are much smarter than me for the U.S. law than I am. But leaving that aside, that's a problem. So if you run on a platform saying, I'm going to go after the former president of the United States on this type of issue, that's a problem.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing right now because something crossed my mind. And I was just like...
Is it something you should or should not share?
Think about this before you share it.
Remember in 2016 when Trump got elected and all these people said they were going to move to Canada? I was just like, maybe Trump should move to Canada.
Well, right now... I'll take any help we can because I can't stand our current government.
No,
but anyways,
what we're talking about, it is so important, like in terms of like your obligation as a prosecutor is you're not supposed to be trying to get
a conviction. Well, you're not there to win or lose, period.
So let's just talk about it because I think this is an interesting debate. You know, an elected position, you will assume then there will be a certain agenda handed down to the assistant district attorneys or the ADAs,
platform,
or whatever you call them.
Yeah.
So there will be a platform. So I think that can be an issue. And then, of course, when you're elected on a platform, that's something that you're going to carry out, ask the politician. Regardless of you being a district attorney, you have to follow through with the promises that you make. I just think when you're tied into an electorate and then you've got to put forward platforms, I think it's a problem.
Differentiate that with our crowns.
Yeah. So here, our crown
who
attorneys
have crown policy manuals.
Who get hired and then they raise through the ranks based upon merit most of the time. And they have a Crown Policy Manual, which is very specific about their duties, their obligations, their judicious review of cases, reasonable prospect of conviction assessments. And frankly, I think they do a generally very good job. And I've said this a number of times. There are some times that we will run into certain situations where we feel the Crown should be exercising their discretion to withdraw, but they feel tied to policy, which I don't like.
Or they should be exercised, like they're possessed by demons.
There's been a few of those.
But only occasionally. But by and large, we complain when charges should be withdrawn or charges should not be coming forward. But by and large, I believe that 9 out of 10 times they want to get it right. And they do take their job seriously. And I think there are flaws within our system, which could be better. But I like the independence of the prosecution branch. They are not beholden to our politicians. You can't have, you know, the attorney general, which is a politician, you know, the elected, firing a head crown attorney because they don't like what they're doing. They stay out of it. When there are various levels, so you have head crown attorneys, then you have a director,
deputy.
You have a deputy, but then
in
you
the
have above them.
Called just prosecutors.
But here we have
attorneys,
a director of crown operations, and then there's a bunch
of
them.
But there's a separation, is what we're getting on. Is a separation between the legal and legislative branches.
That's right. And if they're making
so
calls,
the parliament makes laws, and then the judicial branch decides how to interpret the laws.
Right, but
they have to be separate.
But from the prosecution branch, they're not. So prosecution branches are tied into the provinces in Canada. Right. They are not beholden, in my opinion, from what I've seen, because there have been cases that have been withdrawn that would bring much problem in the provincial legislature, okay?
Right.
But they do that regardless because they know what's right.
Right.
I worry about that when I see people run on platforms in the United States to put somebody behind bars, and that happens. And I find that very disturbing. And I'm glad we don't have it here in Canada. And I'm sure we're going to get some comments about it. But
circle back then, you know, because we are limited in what we can say about Trump. Obviously, we're just watching what's coming out in trial. We're not in the courtrooms ourselves. And, you know, I don't think any of us have an actual position. There's so many diverse cases against him. But, you know, I think in the overview, what is your biggest concern in terms of, if you have any concerns about the way these charges are being brought against him and the way it's being prosecuted?
Well, I've said this before. There's many things I prefer about our common law system that Canada has and other common law jurisdictions like the UK and Australia. We don't run everything through the media. We don't litigate through the media. Yes, there's been commentary lately. I've been part of it with respect to some high-profile cases, but we're more measured. We're more careful. We don't litigate these cases in the media. I can't watch U.S. media. It is literally, for 8 years, it's been about politicians, nonstop. You wouldn't know the world exists beyond the borders of the United States because it's all about either hating Donald Trump or loving Donald Trump or hating him or not, or something in the middle, or in it, whether Joe Biden can walk up the stairs or not. And it's not, you just don't get, I'm sorry, I just don't feel that there is, we've lost media, we've lost reporting, and they litigate everything. Even in small jurisdictions where you have a homicide, I forgot where that case was with the university, those poor students who were killed. The entire, warrant and information to obtain is all in the media. How the investigation unfolded, how they arrest him. I mean, how do you get to a trial and find an impartial jury after you litigated the entire case in the media? Like, literally. At least our reporting on this high-profile murder case that's going on now is while the evidence is coming out in a trial.
Of course, the next question is, if you can find somebody who hasn't read that media, then you're just wondering, I'm sorry, where were you? It's like,
in the United States, it's not going to happen. No. The best he can hope for is a jury of 12 people who honestly will take the oath seriously and say, regardless of my personal opinions, I'm going to judge this on
regardless.
The facts. I'm going to judge this on the facts.
Anybody who says they don't have a personal opinion is a freaking liar.
No, but I think that you can find people who would not necessarily have a personal opinion on the facts that they know about that's been publicized about this case. But what I think is important and what I like about the jury system, and the United States holds very dear to the jury system, you know, to run a trial before a judge there, as they call a bench trial, is like an anomaly. But, you know, but that said, I believe in the jury system, and I believe that people will try and get it right when but you have to drill down to people who say, I'm taking this oath very seriously and I'm going to do it on the facts. But what's difficult is it's been litigated and litigated and litigated in the media nonstop.
I know.
And it's tied up right now during an election.
Right. Since 2016, they're still talking about stuff that's been, you know, even debunked. They're still going on. It's endless. It's endless.
Whether debunked or so, I don't want to create an opinion one way or the other. You know, we all have our own opinions on potentially
facts,
the evidence.
Right. Well, you know, for the members of the media, if you want to be taken legitimately, just focus on the legitimate issues that are current, right? You keep bringing up stuff that's like, you know, it's like, I even saw somebody who's like a Democratic, you know, aligned media saying, why are we still talking about 2016?
But all media is politically aligned. That's the problem. I'm watching, we have it here in Canada. All media is politically aligned. I mean, that's the problem I have, that our media has changed so terribly over the last 30 to 40 years. We don't have independent reporting as far as I know people will say otherwise, but we really lack it. We've seen an erosion in media because we don't care about it the same way. The people are interested in, you know, salacious information and not necessarily what the news is. There's too much misinformation out there and everybody's politically aligned. It's left or it's right, or maybe sometimes a bit in the middle, but it's always left or right.
The most important point to make from what you just said, which is absolutely valid, this is why we have a legal process.
Yes.
Yes.
There are different rules of evidence in court, and there's a reason why somebody gets a fair trial, right?
But I think what we're talking about here, like this is a little bit out of our strike zone, what we normally talk about, but this is at a higher level of where we talk about weaponization of systems in our democratic structure. And that is very insidious. And if we see that happening in the United States and in Canada and other jurisdictions, we start to erode not just confidence, but we start to erode the effectiveness of it and its trustworthiness. I don't care about confidence. I care about trustworthiness. There's a difference to me. I can be confident in something, but that confidence can be misplaced.
No, I care about the rule of law.
No, but my confidence can be misplaced. Its trustworthiness comes from its actual functioning. And that's what I'm concerned about. And, you know, I have to say, like, you know, there's a lot of issues at play in these trials. And I think whatever criticisms you have of the judges, they don't have easy jobs in these trials.
No,
in the United
absolutely
States.
Not.
And it's very difficult.
Know, kudos to the judges who have to deal with this stuff.
It's very hard. But
nobody's going to like them ever.
I absolutely don't want to see this, you know, ever come into a Commonwealth system. It's just I can say after 31 years, and you're 31 or 32
Who's
years.
Who's counting when you're having fun?
But, you know, I think we can say that I have a general trust in our system. We complain about stuff all the time legitimately because it's fact-based. We've seen it. It's not just, you know, our stories, but we've lived it. But generally, we can say we have a trust in the system. But when a system gets to be weaponized so much, when it's so publicized, so politicized, it becomes a problem of trustworthiness. And I've said, and, you know, again, the friend of yours who is that lawyer in the United States said, well, you know, why is our system so more difficult?
Like,
no, but we were having this debate. You know, we get disclosure there.
Conversation.
Right, but it's not like I haven't been down to the United States for cases. I have. I didn't litigate them, but I had to go down with Canadians. We hired U.S. lawyers, and we went down, and I know what disclosure process we got. You know, I got a f***ing summary of a statement. We get video statements. We get evidence really fast here. We get to review it. We get time. We're not put on this fast track to a case. Yes, we have the Jordan rules, but in the United States... time limits. But in the United States, you can find yourself on a fast track to a trial.
Having a trial next month.
You know, you've got to have a lawyer who's prepared and who's getting full disclosure and who's got time with the client and who can manage it, because getting convicted in the United States of certain offenses, you're getting a long sentence.
Oh, I know.
And by the way, he wasn't arguing with you.
They're crazy.
He was agreeing with you.
Oh, I didn't know that. I couldn't tell from your texting.
He wasn't arguing with you. He's agreeing.
This is
he
why I'm talking to in person.
I just found the disclosure process very cumbersome. They call it discovery. Yeah. You don't get nearly as much as you do in Canada.
Which is exactly what he was saying.
And I find that incredibly troubling. I'll never forget this one case in Manhattan where my former partner, who's now a judge, was down there and I was slightly involved. And I remember him messaging me going, I can't believe this. We just got a summary of a witness today. They're testifying tomorrow.
Oh, God.
And it was like, how do you even cross-examine on that? And I'm involved in a case now that...
Well, you could.
No, not necessarily. This was a complex trial.
You're pretty good, Jess.
I really appreciate that. But this was a very complex trial.
Get a room.
And that turned out to be a key witness. And I'm involved in a case now where it's been negotiated because there was no choice but to negotiate it. And oh my God, these agreements and all the things they have to go through, it's just so stacked.
I know.
Against accused people, it's unbelievable.
The thing about this, just to take it back to our original topic about Donald Trump.
And jury selection.
I missed that topic.
You know, there's so much that goes on in court that people don't understand because the media doesn't understand it.
Well, what about immunity? You know, his appeal, I guess, the Supreme Court of the United States about immunity is the president. Leaving aside the arguments and the merits and all that stuff in the United States, I don't believe any politician in any country should ever have blanket immunity.
Right.
Do you?
No.
Would you want our prime minister having blanket immunity?
I don't
immunity?
Either, but for it's some reason,
specifically,
for some reason, I wanted to start shooting rubber bands at you.
Specifically the
current
prime minister.
You know, that's an interesting philosophical question.
But,
because I would agree, except for my experience living in the third world in Latin America, where they arrest every politician.
That's right.
And you don't want to open up that can of worms here.
Right? No, they arrest every politician.
Six of one,
it's
half a dozen
of another. It's basically mini coups.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Those are mini coups.
And that's what we're heading towards if we keep trying to prosecute. Because you don't think the Republicans are now thinking, well, you know what, when we get an office, maybe now we're going to start prosecuting people the same way they've targeted us.
It's a tit for tat. That's right.
He's already said that. Trump's already said that.
Exactly. And that's what they've started by this obsession they had with Trump over these years. Mm-hmm. We're now becoming El Salvador, where the previous mm-hmm. president is in jail for another 6 years or something like that.
Yeah, no, I can see that, because ever since Donald Trump became a legitimate contender in the United States, it's been all Trump 24/7. And everything's bad you can try and drum up about him. And that's not good for democracy either.
It's all propaganda. Have you ever had that sort of, not the Trump specifically, but have you ever had what you would say is just blatant propaganda submitted in a case that you've had to deal with?
No, thank God, not in Canada.
Is that something that happens every year or no?
We have propaganda in the sexual assault areas. That's what we had to fight out with the Me Too movement.
What do you mean propaganda submitted in court? Because who submitted it?
He knows what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I know but you know, if you just say this propaganda submitted in court, to be submitted in court, somebody has to submit it, right? So who you're saying is submitting it?
No, but it can come in not directly.
Not directly, yeah,
it can come in because of all of the... So this is what happened when you first had the Me Too movement and when our prime minister went nuts against the Gio Gomeshi decision, and he decided to come out and criticize and decided to criticize. That was propaganda by a politician who had no right to say a f-ing thing. He did that with the Saskatchewan murder case, you know, saying that the jury rendered an improper verdict.
Right.
You don't do that. But that, so then you have the development of propaganda in our political system, in social media, in our media, and then
how
that
do you
seeps,
separate?
Just what? Then it seeps insidiously into legislation, victim and then into our courts and all sorts of shit. And you can't tell me at the beginning that people aren't thinking about how this is impacting verdicts. You can't tell me how potential jurors are not impacted. That's how propaganda gets in, and it has to be screened out.
I just want to be careful about...
But we do a much better job of it here.
I just want to be careful about the word propaganda, though, because there's a difference between propaganda, which is intentional, and just ill-informed comments that shouldn't have been made.
What's
so how do
you
separate? You? Propaganda is something intentionally planned in order to create an outcome.
Right.
Whereas somebody might sometimes just say something ill-informed that's inappropriate, and you know.
So dumbass versus
the,
smart.
Difficulty
like Twitter. Twitter is ripe for ill-informed comments being published, right?
Well, Twitter and X.
How do you determine whether it's ill-informed comments or whether it's propaganda?
Because you see what the outflow of it is. So people who want
a sustained effort,
people who want to create this propaganda will glom onto some of these comments that are ill-advised or ill-informed made, and then will use that as part of the narrative and start to build more there. Because there are people behind these campaigns, they're quite intelligent in how to do this. Yeah. And that's how you will get it. And that's how it will seep into, that's how it will seep into legislation
and
changes
see,
in law.
We can see like the change in the jury selection process. This was already underway while these other comments
we
came
exactly
out. So
saw that.
Them
we exactly
together.
Saw that in how I am upset about how we got rid of peremptory challenges. We saw a criticism by a prime minister and a justice minister of a jury saying it was not a diverse jury. There wasn't an indigenous person on that jury. Therefore, the entire system that we have for selecting juries has to be changed. You no longer get peremptory challenges because it's a racial bias and you'll never have a diverse jury. And then the first time I get to pick a jury after that f-ing legislation, I get seven white guys, 65 and over. Now, it was a great verdict and they did a great job. Didn't matter what color my client was, who wasn't their color. They did a great job, which just goes to show he got it wrong.
I know. But
it wasn't a diverse jury, and it was his propaganda. He started it by criticizing that jury, by weaponizing, you know, discrimination against indigenous individuals, by not being in court and listening to the facts, and then turned that into legislation. That was the worst thing I've ever seen about political propaganda.
Do you think that has negative repercussions on people who could be potential jurors in the future who just decide, I want nothing to do with this?
Absolutely.
The prime minister's weighing in on this stuff. I'm putting a target on my head. I'm not gonna
Do you think these people who are going on the jury panel in the United States are like f-ing jumping for joy?
Oh, God.
I'm sure they're terrified to some extent because depending upon their verdict, something bad is going to be said about them publicly.
And well, yeah, far... in the States, they're not, they're shielded. They're not
these
shielded.
These
not
jurors, I think, will be shielded more because judges can put in protective orders for them, and they have to. Mm-hmm. But you can imagine with the amount of media attention and what people say recklessly in the media, how these jurors may feel. And in Canada, similarly, too. If a jury gets... How do you think those jurors felt in Saskatchewan? They were either pissed off, angry, or said, that's it. I'm never going to serve again on a jury. Well, I listened to this evidence. I rendered a verdict because I understood what the principle of presumption of innocence and reasonable doubt was. I understood what was explained. Here are the facts, and I did the best job I can. And now I get criticized by the Prime Minister basically calling me an idiot and a racist.
And I know cases.
Yes, I think that does have a negative
I know
impact.
A case in the U.S. where people actually were in the courtroom taking pictures of the jury members.
Yeah. You mean in this?
In the U.S., not in this, but one is a historic case. But I that happens too, and they're much less protected in the U.S. The jury members.
Oh, they are. I mean, here there's extreme
but
protection.
But at least they can respond. They can talk but to this the is media. Where we see, they can write a book. They can.
This is where we see ill-informed or misinformed comments flow into somebody's propaganda machine and become law. Or infect other aspects of our democracy. And that's very dangerous. And one of the most dangerous aspects is when you see it in the criminal justice system.
Can I make a point about just maybe to close this off, because we've been talking for a bit, and of course there's a lot of stuff that still is unknown in these cases. But I think one of the most important things in all of these Trump cases, much of which we don't know a lot about, I think the important question is, are people going to have faith in the election outcome?
Oh God!
Because of the alleged lawfare, and I don't expect you to have an answer to that. But I think really that's one of the things that should be on people's minds.
You know what? I'll say this at the
Civil
risk.
War.
I'll say this at the risk of whatever comments may come my way. Nothing's perfect, and you can't expect perfection. In the process which is going on in the United States with respect to elections, because we don't know enough and no individuals know enough. It's a massive country with a massive population with what seems to me a bit of an archaic way of trying to deal with ballots. And there's all sorts of different ways that things are being done. It's not going to be anywhere near perfect. I think there will always be questions. There will always be concerns about flaws and errors and other things. And we also have, this is way out of what we talk about in criminal law, but we cannot also discount election interference from international actors. I mean, if we think we have right now something going on in Canada about looking about interference from another country in Canada, and we cannot think this doesn't happen. It absolutely does happen. If you expect you can have confidence in what the result is, I don't know. I think you just have to accept it and do the best you can to clean up the process.
The reason I raise that question is because I think it's so important right now for the U.S. to be as transparent as possible, because that's one of the big things, is that these prosecutions are being seen as lawfare. And
I'm also going to say something that's going to be completely unpopular.
But,
let's wind it up,
you
folks.
Can go ahead and say it. But really what I'm saying, I just think it's important for them to do as much as they can to ensure that they're separating the legal and legislative branches, and this is not a political prosecution. If they can do that, it would absolutely benefit all of the United States and everybody watching. To see that this is not connected.
I agree with that. I also think, there's always reasons why people will make certain comments and do it the way they do. We have a little too much vilification of people simply to achieve a particular end. But when you talk about transparency, sometimes there can be too much transparency. I think too much transparency can be detrimental to a democracy. There are some things that you don't air out in the media. There are some things that government has a right to do with government privilege, whatever you call it, that needs to stay there, because we need government to function and act in our best interest. But by trying to put everything into the media by way of transparency, it's going to backfire.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. No, agreed.
Very difficult. Cheers. Sorry. Wait. Very difficult decisions. Very, very difficult decisions have to be made by leaders and their cabinets. And they have to have a degree of privilege to allow them to debate these things and to get it and to try and get at the right decision. So too much transparency is not a good thing.
Well, it would also be helpful if we have media we can trust.
Okay, here we go. So we've talked
until
about
next
jury selection tonight.
For another day.
That's all right.
We went down a whole other thing, but I just think
I know,
you know,
but
a takeaway is very good.
I think this has been a really great open conversation. We all have different opinions on a lot of the issues that we talked about tonight.
Really?
And you know,
could have fooled me, Dan.
Yeah, but this is the most important thing, is to be able to talk about honestly about what you think and what your concerns are. And, you know, because if people don't have trust and faith in our legal system or in our politicians or whatever, it's like we need to be able to talk about it. And so cheers.
And sorry.
The fact
and I just
we're still
can't.
No, to talk
just
about
wait.
It.
We are at a very critical point in our history now from a geopolitical perspective. And we got to get our shit right. And we got to somehow drown out the noise and figure out what are the right things to do. So I think certain things need to be done with respect to our institutions to allow those decisions to be made, because we do live in dangerous times right now. Well, on that happy note, I want to thank you for watching.
As Ernest Becker would say, if you don't get power right the first time, you don't always get a second chance.
So, pillow talk.
I'm waiting for us to start talking about UFOs.
Michael, can you do pillow talk?
What about UFOs? That wasn't transparent. They hid the UFOs.
Can you do pillow talk?
Not with her lying on me.
You're so comfortable. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, share.
Thank you, Diana.
And again, keep sending in those questions. Thank you very much. And if there's topics
Watch
you want
preferences.
Us to cover, please let us
know. Because we read. And
have a good night. And just to let you know, I'm turning 57 this weekend.
Aww.
Happy birthday.
Yeah.
Good night, everybody.